हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगराधर शिवसरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे So then, Chaitanya Upanayanam, Natyashastra, chapter 2, description of the playhouse, verses 75 to 85. Decorative work in the stage. The plinth of the stage, having been constructed thus, one should start the woodwork, which is based on carefully thought out plan, with many artistic pieces such as decorative designs, carved figures of elephants, tigers, and snakes. Many wooden statues also should be set up there, and this woodwork should include near yuhas, variously placed mechanized latticed windows, rows, dharani of good seats, numerous dove cots. What are dove cots? Pillars raised in different parts of the floor, and the woodwork having been finished, the builder should set out to finish the walls. No pillar, bracket, window, corner, or door should face a door. Okay. Yeah. So, the idea is that we're making something that's very aesthetic. Because if it's refined, then it will also assist in the appreciative sentiments that will be there in the audience, because the idea is to bring about them sentiments that are connected with, you know, something higher, with Krishna consciousness. So then when they're fine like that, it also then helps with the finer brain tissues, right? Aesthetics helps develop finer brain tissues. So a natural environment, aesthetic environment, drinking of milk, all these then add to the finer brain tissues. So that's why you see is that they always are, you know, very nicely done, very aesthetic and all this. The idea of just having it plain and all that with nothing, that's more of, I think it's a Protestant principle. That their thing is we don't need all this. It's just, it's a place of worship. We don't need all this fancy stuff. You know, which is true, technically there. But why do you have the fancy? Because the other place you just go into, it's a building, you could be anywhere. You could be there, you could be in somebody's living room, you could be in somebody's garage. But the other, you go to the place and it's done very, very nicely. It gives that sense of fineness and that. There's something fine. Because wherever we are, then finer than that, then finer than that's the Lord. So it just helps create a nice environment for it. You know, and of course, it's according to what you have. But the point is that it should be aesthetic. It shouldn't be just, you just put it together, whatever's the most practical way to get it together, cheapest way. You know, because practical means cheap, right? Practical doesn't mean aesthetic. Practical means cheap. So whatever the most practical way you can put it together, and that's done, and it's like that. And then one wonders why there's no atmosphere, no one's inspired to come, no one wants to take part. But you make something nice, something that, people want to go there. So that's the whole thing. That's the point. Aesthetic aspect then makes it that you're inspired, and in that environment you're happy to be involved in something that's uplifting to the consciousness. That's the purpose. It's not directly itself spiritual, it just helps in that way. Yeah. You know, and then he's also pointing it out that it's also, you know, all done on considerations of Vastu also. Right, so you're seeing that everything's done properly that way. The playhouse, Natya Mandapa, should be made like a mountain cavern, and it should have two floors on two different levels and small windows. And it should be free from wind and should have good acoustic quality. So you have to think, what will be good for acoustics? Not just what's good for design. Right? Means you have the layout, and then you have these principles there, but now what's going to be good for acoustics? Then you're going to design accordingly. And keep all these principles in mind. You're keeping the Vastu things, you're keeping the aesthetics and all that, the practicality and all that. Yeah. Free from wind, and that shouldn't be that wind's whistling through there and all that. It means if it's pleasant, you can leave the windows open, but if you can't, you can close the windows and there's no wind. Because if there's wind, people will be cold or this or getting sick, somebody will be sneezing. No one's going to be focusing on the drama. Plus, they may not come back next time. In such a playhouse made free from the interference of wind, voice of actors and singers as well, as the sound of wind, okay. Voice of actors, singers as well, and the sound of musical instruments will acquire volume, right? So if there's no wind, you get volume. Like here, we're playing using the fans, it creates wind, the volume is harder to hear. Like you see, there'll be, when it cools down, we don't need the fans, it'll suddenly be, wow, it's so loud, like that. And then when it gets hot again, then, you have to work harder. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so the voice of the actors, the singers, and the sounds of the instruments, you'll be able to hear them very nicely, like that, because the construction of walls being finished, they should be plastered and carefully whitewashed. After they have been smeared with plaster and lime, made perfectly clean and beautifully plain, painting should be executed on them. Thus, the architect should construct a playhouse of the oblong type. Right, so of the three shapes, of the square, oblong, or triangle, the rectangle is, square, rectangle, or triangle, the rectangle is recommended, because then you have maximum space for the actors and for the audience, like that. While the square, then you're going to have, it'll be smaller for everybody. And the triangle, there must be some particular purpose in that, but it makes for a much smaller arrangement and stage. Maybe if you're doing, stand-up comedy, then you can use, one guy's out there at a time, then you can use a triangular theater. Right? Yeah, and beautiful paintings should be executed on them. Thus, the architect should construct a playhouse of the oblong type. Similar rules are prescribed for the square and triangular playhouses, with minor variations of the stage size and other arrangements. Because as you adjust, you might have to adjust what facilities you have. Does that make sense? So this gives you the maximum. Like that. Yeah. Huh. Oh, well. See you later. I don't know if they got a moment there before they disappear, but... It's still on?
No.
It doesn't switch automatically?
If you don't turn it off.
Huh? Oh.
But it still takes a little while.
It still takes, a little bit. Yeah, like 30 seconds or something to figure it out.
Sometimes,
yes. No? Okay. Riti, after concluding his discussions on the rules and regulations of a playhouse construction, Bharata Muni next details about the performance of rituals to the guardian deities of the stage. Right, so we've made the stage and all that. We've made the theater, and you see it has the dirt is there. It's pure dirt and all that. Then you built up. It has its columns and all these things, and then basically you would use wood to finish it, and all that. And then you have the roof. And then the walls are done, they're plastered and all that. So it doesn't have to be made with marble, this, that, and other. If somebody wants to make it with stone, you can do that. It just means then you have to carve stone, you have to this other one. It's wood, you do nice things in the wood, it's easy to do. Like that. So then it's the, and plaster and all that. So then you can do all kinds of designs in that. They would generally do the designs in wood, the wall would just be plastered. Nowadays they do the designs in plaster. And put wallpaper on the wall, right? Like that. But in any case, the point is it should be aesthetic, it should be nice, and considering acoustics, like that. Nice colors, nice, it should be pleasant and all that. So since you're using wood will have its particular colors, so the colors you put which should match that, You know, you don't want anything too bright and all that, you know, like bright, you know, how you say, pink or yellow walls. Then you won't be able to see what's going on. You'll be distracted. So it has to be something that blends in nicely. Yes.
I think a theater like that can be built in a place or there is a special, more favorable position in its head.
I haven't come across that. We could probably ask later. But I haven't seen if there's a specific place where you put playhouses.
Yes.
Like that, but there would generally be some place that's accessible for the public. If they're too far out of the way, how will they get there? Same time as you want to consider is that since as acoustics is an important thing, then depending on where you put it, if there's too much, you know, like in contemporary, too much traffic and this, then you would have to make it more soundproof, so it's more effort. Well, if it's in a place that's more quiet and peaceful, then less effort there. You can put that effort into, you know, the size or the aesthetics and other things like that. So you just have to see. But there might be a specific in Vastu which area to put it, but yeah, I'm not, but right, it hasn't mentioned it. Chapter 3, Rituals to the Guardian Deities, Adhyaya Prakashika. Having stated the rules for proper construction of the playhouse, the current chapter elaborates on the rituals to be performed for sanctification of the playhouse. Bharat Muni explains that the master of dramatic art, director of the play, should first purify himself by performing austerities and controlling the senses. Then he should gratify the Supreme Lord and the demigods who guard the stage of the playhouse by first offering obeisances as well as prayers and then make specific offerings of foodstuffs and gifts to gratify each of them according to the prescription of the scriptures. After this, the author details on the good results of proper performances of the rituals and on the evil effects caused due to improper performance of the rituals. Thus, one should be very cautious and make proper efforts to gratify the guardian deities of the stage. Shloka Anusharana. Right, so, in other words, these things are being pointed out so you know what you're dealing with. So now, if now in this, by worshiping Krishna, you don't have to worship the separate demigods that are taking care of the stage. But the point is you do have to worship Krishna. You know, so we'll say, oh, we don't worship demigods, and then we'll cut out that part. But at the same time, they don't worship Krishna in it either. And so then how is? So that's the whole point. And so Manu is about how everything's connected. The Varnashram system's connected to Vishnu. That was the whole point of the Manu Samhita. Still in there, they have one full chapter on showing about the previous, about rins, the debts that you have, the debts that you owe, but just by being born, you know, to the family, the demigods, the sages, all living entities, to the Brahmins, like this. You have these debts. They can be paid by worshiping Krishna. That means you have to worship Krishna. You can't think that, oh, I'm a devotee, I don't worship Krishna, and I don't do all these other things. So it should be very clear is that this is the purpose of the drama and all that is worship of the Lord and to bring the audience up to the Krishna consciousness. Invoke in them Krishna consciousness. That's what it's for. So then it has its, you know, just like deity worship has its ritual, so the theater has its rituals. Right? You know, in the house there's the rituals. You have your, when you wake the deities up, when you put them to rest, when your offerings are. You know, whatever it is, according to your ability and your place. You keep the place clean, you know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Shloka Anusharanam, verses 1 to 16. Consecration of the playhouse. In the auspicious playhouse, constructed with all the characteristics, cows and qualified Brahmins. It's all the characteristics. Cows and qualified Brahmins should be made to dwell for a week. So after you make the theater, then you bring cows and Brahmins and they live there for a week. You know, to make it auspicious. I don't think they did that with the Sydney Opera House. Yeah, so it didn't work out for them. Right? When the master of the dramatic art, who has been initiated and has put on new clothes, fasted for 3 days, lived away from his dwelling house, has kept his senses under control, and has thus become purified, will besprinkle his limbs with water over which purificatory mantras have been uttered, in other words, Achman, and that, and consecrate, and Prokshana, and concentrate the playhouse. this instruction signifies that the director of the place should be a qualified Brahmin, right? Because that's it. He's a qualified Brahmin, practicing Brahmin. Then he performs these things. But you see is that, you know, you want to be the director? One, you're a Brahmin. Two, you're austere, you're sadhana, all these things are there. Not that, no, just I feel like it, or I'm better than him. I've been around longer. I'm older. I'm this, I'm that. You know, come back 3 weeks or I'm, nothing like that. No. It's just, no. It's that these are qualifications. So you see, it's just like basically the same qualification like you need for deity worship or anything else. That's because everything is meant to uplift you to Krishna consciousness. Right? Like a Chanakya Pandit. He is the minister to the king, prime minister, but he lives in his own little grass hut, not maintained by the king. You know, because he saw what happened to Bhishma and Drona and Kripa. So he's not going to have that happen. So he lives on his own, goes out begging, maintains himself. And, you know, follows it, and so then he's respected as that great Brahmin. Does that make sense? So it has to be, that's part of it. Whatever feature is there in the Vedic culture, it's all about becoming God conscious. So the center is all going to be the same. So you see, as we go, and each aspect that you get into, it has the same basic formula. There's a uniqueness for the theater, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
It's like the theater is like a place for worshipping Krishna.
Yes, it's for worshipping Krishna. And so it's like that.
And here, like you said, the director passed for 3 days.
Yes.
3 consecutive days.
3 consecutive days. Yes, he. I fasted when I was sick that time. I fasted for 3 days. Yeah, but that was 20 years ago. That still doesn't apply. You know? The point is one's Krishna conscious and one's not in an enjoying mood and all that. You know, it's just like, let's say, before the whole program goes, then they're going to have a party and everything like that, be up all night, so the next morning he goes dragging himself, you know, like that with a hangover, you know, like that. That's not what happens. This consecration should take place after he has made obeisance to the Supreme Lord Vishnu, great God Shiva, Brahma, who sprung from the lotus, Brihaspati, the preceptor of the gods, Guha, Kartikeya, Saraswati, Lakshmi, Siddhi, Medha, Smriti, Mati, Chandra, Surya, wind, the winds, guardians of all directions, Ashvins, Mitra, Agni, and other gods, such as Rudra, Varnas, Kala, Kali, Yama, Niyati, the whip of Yama, weapons of Lord Vishnu, the Lord of the Nagas, serpents, the Lord of the birds, Garuda, thunderbolt, lightning, seas, Gandharvas, Apsaras, sages, Natya maids, Maha, Gramani, the great leader of the Ganas, Yakshas, Guyakas, and the host of Bhutas, because they're all doing some service, as we saw before. Who did what? Somebody's in the pillars, someone's in the plinth, someone's in the roof, someone's in the this, that stage, you know. So they all have their place that they're taking care of, and that way it's protected. So if you worship Krishna, then that's taken care of. Like you see in the Odissi, because it's for Jagannath, they just have an obeisances to Jagannath before they start, and then they start their drama. Right, so there is something that's there, some invocation. You see, when the acharyas write dramas, we'll see when we go. There's something about glorifying the Supreme Lord. So something will be there. Right, you know, some kind of worship. So it has to be appreciated. Then everything will be auspicious. Just like before you start the deity worship, you go, you purify yourself as there. You know, it's Brahma Muhurta. You've had your bath and all that. Then you go in. Offer your obeisances, you go in, worship Guru, Gauranga, and everything, then you worship the deities. Having made obeisances to these and other divine sages, Devarshis, there you made it. He should, with folded palms, invoke all the gods to their respective positions and say, O holy ones, I guess, O Holy Ones, take us under your protection during the night, and with your followers, please offer us assistance in this dramatic performance. Like that. After proceeding thus according to the rules and staying in the playhouse for the night, he, the master of the dramatic art, should begin puja as soon as it is morning. Right? So in the morning, then he'll get up, he'll do his, you know, his sadhana, things like that. Then he'll start the puja. So before the cows and Brahmins have lived there for a week, then, you know, then it'll be, you know, nice and cleaned. Then he's going to do that consecration of having, you know, an austere. Then he's going to purify himself and all that, invoke everybody. And then the next morning he'll start the puja. Right? So this is for invocation of the thing. You see, it's just like you're doing a building, then you're going to do the Vastu Puja and all those things. It's a similar principle, but this is just in the context of the drama house, like that. But it's the same principle. Okay. The stage should be illuminated, and the puja of the gods in its connection should be, or I guess in their connection, should be performed by the master of the dramatic art after he has purified his body and concentrated his minds on these acts. So he's done purvang the karma, right? Verses 93 to 101. That was 1 to 16, now 93 to 101. I guess the middle ones was all the puja didn't matter. Okay, 93 to 101. Good and evil results, because we like to keep the form of the text. But if that whole section, it's just like in the Manu, then that whole, basically, except for the opening and ending of one of the chapters, I think it's maybe the fifth chapter or something like that, it's all on Pitri Puja. So we don't do that. And so all the different things are there. So that basically the whole chapter you can skip. There's a few points that are there, as, you know, for understanding, you know, why it's important. And then a few points in just why when you're serving prasad, you behave how you do. Like you don't shake, like you see. Someone wants to know something, they shake it, they smell it. Prabhupada mentioned, it says, smelling's for animals. You look, you see what it is. You want to know what the prep is, you look. You know, so therefore, you see in there, it's bad results. If you shake it, you smell it, all these things that go. But that's just, you know, it's just bad etiquette. So when you do that in general, you don't do that. But if you do it for the Petris, then you get a bad reaction, right? You know. So same way, it's just what's that gives us an understanding what's going on. But we know then we worship the Lord. 93 to 101. Good and evil results succeeding proper and improper consecration. If the stage is properly consecrated, it will bring good luck to the king and to the people, young and old, of the city as well as the country. Right? So it means everyone will get benefited, because it's nice, it's auspicious. So anyone comes there, the king, because he's the one who sponsored it. You know, he'll get benefit. Like that, he'll also be able to come and see things and get benefit. The common people will be, it's not just the city people, also the country. Everybody will get benefit. But when the auditorium is not consecrated in the proper manner, it will be indifferently held by gods. And there will be an end of the dramatic spectacle. And it will likewise bring evil to the king. Like you sometimes have, it's not an uncommon thing that there's famous theaters where they just don't use. No one will use the building. They won't even touch it. They won't even knock it down and put in a high-rise or something. They just won't go near it because something happened bad there. Someone was murdered or some wild thing happened in that theater. And then they just leave it. They won't do any more performances. No one will use it. No one will go inside. You know. No? You haven't heard of those? Yeah. Yeah. So like that. So that's the whole thing. That's what we say. If you don't do it, who knows what's going to happen? So that's why, well, it's not, you don't hear that, okay, there's an apartment building, someone gets killed, it's like, okay, you know, clean it up, rent it out to someone else. But the theater specifically, because it's just like, you know, does that make sense? So people are, that means that it wasn't consecrated properly, you know? Or it's, you know, something wrong. So you built it according to the Vastu, you've consecrated it properly, then it's going to be good. So it's just a thing to learn. Your house also, you know, you pick the proper place, you use the Vastu, you do the proper pujas, you know, to please Krishna, and then everything goes nice. And if not, then there's a problem. Right? There was, I don't know if you ever saw, there was huge house in Calcutta down, you know, Southern Avenue? No, not so much. But it's way down near the lakes. Very nice. It's an avenue. It's boulevard down the middle. So it comes down and it curves. And just on one side of that, there used to be this huge, very far out house. Multiple buildings that they were all connected on the roof and everything. And it was really nicely done. And I asked about it, why is it no one's living there? They said that, oh, because, you know, something like, I don't know, 60 years ago or something, someone was murdered there. You know, someone in the family. And they never figured out how it worked in that, and it was just no one would live there. Like that. Now they've, you know, decided to put a road through the middle of the property, and, you know, so whatever. But, you know, so that's why these things are there. You do them because otherwise materially you don't know. If you're serving Krishna and all that, then everything will go nice. But it doesn't mean that there's not difficulty. You know, but the point is serving Krishna, it's not like the Pandavas lived in the forest. Not that it wasn't difficult, but they were Krishna conscious. Everything went well. So that's why then it's just recommended. You're doing these things, why not? It's service of Krishna. It's worship of Krishna. Why we wouldn't consider these things? You know, it's not that today I go, hey, let's build, you know, a theater, and then the next day we start digging. No, there's all plans, this, that, so if you plan that, we can also plan everything else. Right? Same with the house, same with the temple, you know. Okay. Not considered, indifferently held by the gods means they don't care, so they don't protect it. And there will be an end of the dramatic spectacle, and it will likewise bring evil to the king. He who willfully transgresses these rules of consecration of the stage and practices the dramatic art will soon sustain loss and will be reborn as an animal of lower order. Right? So he won't end up as a cow that he gets to live in the theater. Right? Yeah. So willfully, if you don't know, you're doing the best you can, and you try to worship, you know, Krishna nicely, and that, then it'll work out. But you shouldn't go, oh, we don't have to do it, because then that's willfully. Right. Offering worship to the gods of the stage is as meritorious as a Vedic sacrifice, right? Because that was the whole idea. How will the common person get as much benefit, you know, as the Brahmins reading the Shastra, right? They read the Shastra, they get a realization. The common people see a drama, they get realization, right? So it's the same principle. No dramatic performance should be made without first worshipping the deities presiding over the stage. When worshipped, they will bring you worship. And honored, they will bring you honor. Right? So therefore, you do that, then afterwards everyone will respect those personalities and like this and that. You know, so they do. Just like you see, like we see in the, you know, the Mahabharata or in Bhagavatam, then even, let's say, you take someone like the, you know, these great kings, right? Ambarish, he does worship. He worships the Lord because he respects and worships. He's being respected and worshipped. All the great kings, all the great Brahmins, you know, like that. Like Durvasa early, then, you know, he's mentioned. But it's only after that passed out with Ambarish, then we kind of have, you know, deal with them in a different way. Because now he accepts the devotees, the Lord, and everything like that. You know? So that's the principle, is that if someone, they themselves are respecting the Lord, they will be respected. But you don't respect, you know, the Lord and that, then you won't be respected. You know? So that's the, even you work and do everything that is to be done to be respected, you won't be. You might be for initially, and then it'll disappear. Never will fire fanned by violence and wind burn things so quickly. Never will fire fanned by... Oh, okay. Never will fire fanned by violent wind burn things so quickly, because you know how quick that is, as defective rites will burn quickly the master of the dramatic art. So in other words, I say, ignoring these things, he'll be destroyed quicker than if you have a big fire and there's violent winds blowing. You know, that's very destructive, so this is worse. So the stage should be worshipped by the master of the dramatic art who is purified, disciplined and proficient in the rules of the art and initiated into the practice of it and has quiet of mind. That's a big one. Quiet of mind. Hence, one should by all efforts offer proper worship to the gods of the stage. Riti. Next, the story behind the inclusion of class dance. Okay, it's a particular class of dance. And intricacies in its performance, as Natya is narrating. Chapter 4, description of the Tandava dance. The current chapter describes the story about the inclusion of Tandava in the Natya Shastra and details on the various movements of the hands and feet involved in the performance of the Tandava dance. It also enlists the occasions favorable and unfavorable for the performance of dance during the play. Shloka Nisharna. Verses 1 to 15. Performance of the first play after the worship of the guardian deities. After having worshipped the gods presiding over the stage, Bharat said to Brahma, "Tell me quickly, O Mighty One, which play should be performed?" Lord Brahma replied, "Perform the Amrita Manthana, the churning of the ocean, which is capable of stimulating efforts and of giving pleasure to gods." Bharata has composed the Sama Vakara play in three acts, which is conducive to the performance of duties, dharma, to the fulfillment of desires, kama, as well as to gain wealth, artha. When this Sama Vakara was performed, gods and demons were delighted to witness actions and ideas familiar to them. Now in course of time, Brahma said to the sage, "We shall present today the play before the great soul Shiva." On reaching along with other gods, the abode of Shiva, Brahma paid him respects and said, "O best of the gods, please do me the favor of hearing and seeing the Samavakara, which has been composed by me." "I shall enjoy it," said the Lord of Gods in reply. Along with the performance of the Amrita Manthana, another drama named Tripura Daha, the burning of Tripura, was performed. Then all the Bhutas and Ganas were pleased to see actions and ideas familiar to them. And Shiva too was pleased and said to Brahma, "O the high-souled one, this drama, Natya, which is conducive to fame, welfare, merit, and intellect, has been well conceived by you. You should include dance, which is made beautiful by Angahara." Haras, consisting of different karanas to your play. So right now they've just performed the drama. So now Shiva, having seen that, then he was saying you should add dance to your drama. And you see here is that the gods and the demons, they came to see the play of this, what was it? Amrita Manthana. Because that's something that they both were involved in. So it's something they could relate, and it was like that. Now, Lord Shiva destroying the Tripura, then that's something the Bhutas and Ganas, and Lord Shiva, they're familiar with. Because Shiva did that, and they're his followers, so they're aware of that one. So then it's always that, for the audience, it should be something that's familiar to them. Something they can relate to. But always in context of uplifting the consciousness. Verses 16 to 30.
It is said here that the Sama Vakara,
yes,
the act, is conducive to dharma, karma, and artha.
Yes.
So it means it's helping the people who are seeing the drama to develop these three.
That means if you're engaged in your dharma, artha and kama naturally come. But you have to also understand, when you're dealing with artha, how to deal with artha, what's the proper thing. And then karma, how to engage the senses. So for the devotee, he's just doing his activities to please Krishna. So then the results that are got are for Krishna, so he'll maintain them nicely. And he'll engage those in Krishna's service into please Krishna's senses. And in that way, take care of the devotees. Then you know properly how to do. So there's that balance of all that. So the point is you're engaging the senses. It's not you're stopping the senses. You know, like sometimes it's thought that taking prasad is sense gratification. No, that's totally against the definition of what sense gratification means. It's about the senses, not about Krishna. So when you're taking prasad, it's about Krishna. You may be more or less absorbed in Krishna, but the point is, since it's Krishna, you're appreciating Krishna. Like that. And so you get benefit. Otherwise, if it's not Krishna, why after they fed the ducks in Regent Park, then next life they'll be human? Right? Ducks, the next birth is not human. Right? So that's the whole point, is that it's spiritual. So then sometimes we get this idea that if somebody's happy and enjoying themselves, that's wrong. You must be miserable. I even had people ask me, so, you know, because I have a nature and I'm comfortable and happy doing a particular service. So because I'm happy, is that, you know, then that must be wrong. So then wouldn't it be better for me to choose a service I really don't like to do, and then doing that to please Krishna, then that's real surrender? But that's all on the mundane concepts. The point is you're engaging your nature in Krishna's service. It's Krishna's nature. You're happy because he's happy. You know, this idea that, oh, if I become happy, it's bad. No. So you see, many times these problems come up in people practicing religion. It was also a big thing, I'm not sure when it came up, but in early Christianity, you know, after Paul's influence, then anything to do with senses, they just did nothing. A very rough, austere life and all that. But it wasn't that they were engaging their senses necessarily more. They were doing prayer. But, you know, how do you engage yourself all day like that? You know? Like that, you have to do other things. So then in this way, you know, basically your whole culture goes. And then right after that you had the Dark Ages. And then you wonder why. You know, because anything to do with culture, philosophy, anything, everything was thrown out. And it was just faith in God. You know, so they're nice, but why not faith in God with all those things? Then you have great cultures and everything. So now it's they separate it, so you have all this wealth and all that without God, and then you have the God thing, and that's just part of your life on the side. They can't use them together. You know what I'm saying? While others generally are able to mix it a little bit more easily. You know, the lifestyle and the faith and religion all go together. So one has to be very, very careful about this, that one doesn't get too much into this aspect that, no, the senses are engaged. But you're showing them how they properly engage in Krishna's service. Right? Because you can tell someone to do that, and then you can have a drama where it's being done. Okay. Right? And if it's on this kind of topic, then it's more, people are more inclined. You get the widest range. You can preach to everybody. But if you're doing something for devotees, you don't have to focus. You just show the pastimes of the Lord, the devotees, their interaction. Bring out those nice interactions and things like that. Does that make sense? So you focus on Krishna and the interactions with the devotees. It may be the aspect of killing the demons, but you don't have to sit there and spend 10 minutes showing how sinful they are. You know, it's not necessary. You know, unless the play is a super long play and everything's just long, then it's all right. Verses 16 to 30. Uses of karanas and angaharas. So I think hand movements and the movements of the limbs. You know, the arms, the head, the legs, the feet, like that. To these words of Shiva, Brahma said in reply, O best of the gods, tell us about the use of the angaharas. Then Shiva called Tandu and said, speak to Bharata about the use of the angaharas. Footnote 5. According to Bharata's Natya Shastra, karana is not a pose, but the complete unit of dance movements. Karna is the most important primary unit of movement. Karna is a combined movement of the feet and hands, which, though momentarily static, is a dramatic, dynamic series of movements which culminates in a specific pose. Natyashastra has described 108 karanas, each comprising specific movement of foot, calf, thigh, knee, waist, chest, neck, arms, and hands. So it's all together. You know, so then in that karana, then what is the foot, what is the arm, what is everything doing? And you see there's that momentary, momentarily static, because in the dance, the Bharat Natyam, that's the original. This is Bharat Natyam, it's the dance that he gave. That's why you'll see is that it's always moving, but there'll be stop and moment and this and that. And that's, that concept is sometimes very hard for some people to catch. Well, you find generally in South, and they can do that very easily. You can move from one thing to the next. You know, in other words, if they don't conscious, in the next life they'll be a popper or something. You know, popping? The dance popping, you know, they do all those things. Yeah, but that specific thing where they do that, that's called popping. You know, so, because they just do static things, a constant movement of static things. It's a little more gross. But the Bharat Natyam is a little more subtle. But there's a stop at each thing. Well, if you can't catch them, then you go for Odissi, because it just moves. It doesn't stop. You know, like that. So then it's nice. But the original, the root one is that. And then from that comes so many. Just like you have the Veda, then you have the Smritis. So then you have so many nice forms that come from that.
Bharat Natyam is the original dance.
Yes, it's the original. Yeah, it's the original that's been documented for us to do. Just like the ragas, you can say there's the original ragas, but the ragas are documented so we can use it. Otherwise, before that, you had the, what are they called? Wow. Whatever, the Samans, then they are the origin of the music. And from those go into, what are they called? There's a group of 18 of them. And so from that, you can get all the music out of that, but you have to know what you have to have so much knowledge to be able to use them properly. Well, the ragas, then you've broken up, let's say there's this one group of notes and how you can use it. Then that group, you can get from that so many different forms that you could use. And they'll be able to move one into the other, just like one emotion moves into the other. But that becomes very difficult for people. So then they have, a raga is one move. So out of that one, you get so many. And so then there's this raga, this. So Narad Muni gave us the ragas. Right? And so then we're able to relate to it. So then Bharat Muni, he's given us, because dance is there before Bharat, put it down. But then, because it's there, then it's Bharat Natya. So then we take from him. So that will be the starting point. Okay. Angahara is the name of collective movements comprising several karanas. Right? So then you have 108 karanas. And then you have a collective movements that you move between certain ones, just like we're saying, as in a certain rasa, that you can get certain anuraga. Anubhavas, you know, or vyabhicharis, or these kind of things. So all those together make this one kind of thing. When Lord Shiva performs the tandava, several karanas are linked together to form a garland of dance poses and movements. So it's not just anything; they're moving in a particular way. Yes.
So tandava in this particular case means just a general dance, or
it appears so from right here. It's not tandava meaning that it's necessarily the destructive. That is also a tandava. That there's specific ones where he destroys universe, like Krishna danced on the head of Kali. He dances on all the heads of the planetary heads. And that way destroys all the planets, destroys everything.
Yeah.
So that's what, you know, is known there. But it appears that here it has a more general aspect. Mm-hmm. So you have the karanas, and then they have groups of them, how they move together, and that's the angahara. Yeah, right here. You should include dancers made beautiful by angaharas, consisting of different karanas in your to your play. Right? So different karanas are there, the 108 moves that signify different specific things. Those are put together in movements. So there's a particular movement you can do between using many of these karanas to produce a particular effect. Right? Yeah. These become the angaharas, garlands of dance poses of Lord Hara, Shiva. So then they're considered garlands. Right? Longer sequences of movements are like garlands and are thus known as angahara. In total, 32 angaharas are explained by Tandu to Bharat Muni. So you have 108 karanas, and then those can be put together in garlands of 32 angaharas. Yeah. So then you see, that's the idea. You study, then you can appreciate what's going on. Because like now with this understanding, and understand that it's these moments, you'll be, if you see a performance now, a Bharatanatyam, you'll notice the stopping movements. And then how one's moving to the next and all that. So that movement, that's the angahara. We may not know what the karana means or how many of those karanas make up that angahara. But we'll know that that's what's going on. And then with time, if you learn them and that's right before, is that the girls would learn the dance. Because then they know what it is. So when they see a performance, they know. And also boys are into, they would learn also. It wasn't uncommon. Like that. And so then when they watch a performance, they appreciate it. It's not that they're going to become dancers. It's that when they do, they know these things. It's very nice. It refines and all that. Plus then they know what's going on. So in other words, all the girls would learn the dance, but only dancers would do it as a public performance. All the other girls would never do. That's why I said in the beginning that, you know, the boys generally do the drama, and if you have girls doing it, then they're of another class. You know, they're not your general, you know how you say it? Your general girls wouldn't be doing. You know, so they're in their own category. Because the etiquette in dealing with actresses and that is different than you would with other women. Yes?
So does it mean there's no strict rule in Bharatanatyam that only men perform?
Means generally you see, generally all the girls from the culture families would learn it, but they wouldn't perform it. Right, and then boys would learn it, and then if they're learning it, then they may or may not perform it. You know, it doesn't matter. But if girls are performing it publicly, then generally the etiquette on dealing with them is different than it would be for other girls. You know, if everybody goes up and hangs out and talks with them, it's not actually a problem. You know, means it's not breaking a religious rule. It may be contaminating to the mind and all that, and all that, so you have to be careful, but it's not sinful, like if you went up and everybody just started talking to some married lady. Like that. So there's a difference there. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know? It's just like, let us say, in a modern context, you know, even though people don't really know it, but it's kind of inherent. Let us say we have, for some film, some prominent actress is doing a scene where she is not overly well-dressed, right? We will not go into any more detail. So, you know, everybody will be, how you say, talking about the pictures, but it will have zero effect on her social status. She'll still be, the movie was a hit, she'll still be invited to all the talk shows to talk this, they may talk, well, you know, how do you feel when you're doing these kind of scenes? And, you know, then there'll be some kind of talk about it, you know, and other ones that are there, yeah, you know, did that, you know, like, oh, you did a scene like that too? I didn't know, and, you know, does that make sense? You know, and it's just part of the talk, and nobody cares. You know, doesn't mean that common people won't try to be overly friendly, but it doesn't ruin their status. But let's say we have someone who's socially of a good status in society, and pictures like this come out, it ruins their status. You know? Even though it's something everybody's doing. You know? In a sense. So that's the fun part, is that even though everybody says that we don't care for, it's inherent in the nature of the material energy, in the modes of nature. This is just how it works. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So now we have many, type of boxes or etiquette how we work, how we live in the human society.
Yes, yes.
And if you do something against, you already can see.
Yes. Yes, yes. Means that's why it's all there, because Manu is describing human lifestyle. But the human form of life, there's a difference. There's human life and there's human form of life. So the human form of life can be trained to act as human, or they can act in any one of the 8 million, 400,000. You know, that's the whole thing. They can do all these things. So you know, that's the point. It's just they don't follow the etiquettes. Just like, let's say, you have those big, Hanuman monkeys, the langurs, like that. You can have a bunch of bananas in your hand, walk over to them, they'll be looking at you, they'll look at the bananas, sit down, take a banana, hand one to them, break another banana off, and you eat it, and they'll eat it. They won't just stuff it in and then try to get that, they'll eat it. And then you hand them another banana, there's no problem. But you get those little gray, like the Vrindavan monkeys, like that. You have bananas, even before you've offered, they'll come and steal them all. And even if you do get it where you don't, you hand them one, they'll grab that one, but they'll look at you that you're looking at them, and then they'll grab the bunch and run off. And so they're just uncultured, you know? And so they're considered a lower level of monkey than the langurs. And even when it comes to pecking order, if there's a bunch of those others and a langur comes in, he's the boss. You know? The quickest way to get rid of a bunch of Vrindavan monkeys is bring in some langurs. They'll just get rid of them immediately. Because it just, who wants this riffraff around? You know? It's just, they're so uncultured.
They have, in MDT, they have langurs working and chasing away the macaques.
That's so far out. Like that. You keep some langur, feed them nicely, and they'll get rid of all the other monkeys. Like that, you know? Yeah.
Pandavanandu is saying that there is some Russian drama that is known to bring bad luck to the actor. That is Master and Margaret and Bulgakov. Bad luck to them.
Yes, so then why perform the drama? if it's shown...
Huh? Say, if in the movie they make, don't take that luck to the actor.
Yeah, so it's just, it said there's certain things that are there. So there's structures to how a drama is done, how actors are due, and if you go against it, it'll be problems. So, here's a practical example. But could you say, the name?
Master and Margarita.
Oh, okay.
What's it called?
Master and Margarita.
Master?
Margarita. Margaret is a lady's name.
Oh, the Master and Margaret. Okay.
You know that?
No.
It's very famous.
Okay. But rarely performed.
It's quite complex.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, it's rarely performed because whoever performs it, then gets burnt to ashes or whatever.
They all die.
Yeah.
So. Classical rational stuff. Everybody dies in there.
It's like Dostoevsky.
It's like,
Well,
yeah. It's like the Chinese traditional Chinese. Everybody gets killed like that.
They say the modern psychiatrists, they say to make you feel better, one of there are like 10 steps or something. One of them is read Russian classics. Anyway, it's worse than what you.
Oh, I see. Because the Russian classics worse than what you're going through, then you'll feel better. Yeah, but at the same time, not more Krishna conscious. So if they want that, then they should say, read Ramayana or Mahabharata, because what happens there is worse than what happens to you, but at least then you become God conscious.
Same principle.
Yeah, same principle. Just that's the thing. It's just the atheist. Yeah. So you can see, as with time, as you start to notice, everything that's going on has its value in that, because it's connected, it's Krishna's laws. But people are trying to see it without Krishna, so it has this fog of ignorance covering it, and you think it functions on its own. Everything functions because of its connection to Krishna. It's his energies. Like we said, you know, the Jiva Goswami is saying, Krishna's energies then pervade everything. That the Jiva is given that potency to be able to engage in Dharma Artha Kama. Like that. And so then there, and you deal nicely, follow the rules, then that power will continue or increase. You don't follow the rules, then you won't get that power. And then, you know, you feel bad and that, and then you finally get it together and follow another. And then you get that potency. So it's Krishna's energy that's making everything work. But people they don't want to connect it to Krishna. They don't want to admit it's Krishna's. They don't want to, you know, see it in context of Krishna, because it's thought, if I do it for Krishna, I'll enjoy less. But doing it for themselves, they don't enjoy it all. So anything's better than that. So do it for Krishna, and then they see devotees are happy. Why? Because they do everything for Krishna. Yeah, Prabhupada said, from hippies to happies. Right, you know. Okay. And thus Tandu told Bharata the use of Angaharas as well as the various karmas and rechakas. There are a total 32 Angaharas whose performance is dependent on the karmas. The combined movement of hands and feet in dance is called karna. Three karnas make a khanda. Three to four khandas make a mandala. Four to nine karnas make an angahara. Four to five angaharas also make a mandala. Because it may be it's a complete thing in itself. Because you're going to have a group, just like, in other words, three karnas make a khanda, and three to four khandas make a mandala. So that mandala has a certain completeness in it, though then you have to have a group of those to make the angahara. Right? Because it always has parts. Does that make sense? Like that. But at the same time as then four or five angaharas, they also make a mandala, because then that four or five, that completes an overall thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's subtle, but you know, that's why the use of sometimes words, the same word, because the principle of the word is the same. Though in one context it's meaning a smaller circle, and the other one means a bigger circle, but the point is it means a circle. You've completed a circle. Right? Riti. More information on karanas and angaharas from Abhinava Bharati. He's also an authority in these things. Bharata has divided body movements into four groups: karnas, angaharas, rechakas, and pindi bandhas. Each karna is made up of a stanaka, sitting posture, chari, gait, and nirita, hasta, hand posture. Right? So it'll have all these different things. How you're going to situate yourself, how you move. Yes?
Mandalas are used in showing fight in a drama, it seems. Mandalas are used in showing fight in a drama, whereas angaharas are generally used in dance.
But at the same time, it says here four to five angaharas also make a mandala. So it may be that it's more used there. But the point is that it makes a completeness. If there's a principle there, then there's going to be the detail of use of it. Right? According to Abhinava Gupta, karna is action, kriya, karanam, and is the very life, jivatam, of nritya. The pure dance movements, footnote 6, nritya, abstract dance movements with rhythm, but without expression of theme or emotion, also called pure dance. Oh, that's nrita. Okay. Nritya, interpretive dance using facial expressions, hand gestures, bodily movement to portray emotions and express themes. Natya, the dramatic aspect of a stage performance, including spoken dialogue and How do you say that?
Mime.
Mime. You say mime.
Okay. In French, you say meme.
Yeah, meme. Because that's the thing. I was going to say meme. Because somehow or another, I've been... what do you call it? But I know English is mime. Then I wanted to know what it was. It's meme. Okay. Mm. To convey meaning and enact narrative. Right? So, in other words, what is the exact dance movement and everything? What's the mechanics of it? That's going to be the nrita. Then applying that with the emotion and how you want to express, that's the nritya. Then that all together with all the other aspects that are there in the drama, that's natya. So in other words, you have the mechanics, then you apply them into the emotional state, then you use it all together, all the things to present something, a production. Does that make sense? So you see that how there, again, the mechanics are there, then the applied, then you get the full thing. So what do you have? You have the situation, right? Then you have the activity, and that, what you're trying to do, and then you have the overall. So then you have the jnana, is the nrita, the kriya is the nritya, and then the, the icha, or the pastime, is the natya. Mm-hmm. So you see, everything's always going to be in these forms, but when you apply it to the drama, it takes on these names. You apply it in philosophy, it has other names. You apply it in a different one of the 14 books, it'll have another name. But that's the whole point of trying to connect, is that you see all of them are the same thing. It means whatever we know in philosophy, that's all there is. But now you can apply it in all the various things, and then you see it how. So that's the thing, the Vedic, it's all consistent. All the, aparavidya, you know, or just the material knowledge, is all just the forms of to be used in Krishna's service. Like that. And you can see the connection all the way through. But people have lost that. They don't know, so they just know these areas and think they stand on their own. But they're all just part of that central part of tattva, Krishna's tattva. It's all Him. Then, for tasting the rasa, all these are there to bring that out in service to Him. But you forget Him, then, okay, you can bring out rasa in, let's say, in this, in drama, if you still follow Krishna's rules. And if you don't follow Krishna's rules, then there'll be problem. You know, people might like it, but it won't be very universal. You know, and then those that, then they'll think, oh, you know, because we're the connoisseur.
Connoisseur.
You know, we're that, and the others are just common people. They don't understand. But actually, maybe it's the other way around. They have a particular taste for something that's actually not nice. You know, like pigs can taste stool and distinguish between different kinds of stool. And like that. So they're the connoisseur of stool. You know, and then everybody else, they don't care for it. Ah, who are these guys? You know, Cretans, you know, Philistines. Like that. Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.